Jaya Veta Chandra Jaya Gora Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Veta Chandra Jaya Gora Bhakta Vrinda.
Stop, drop.
Sorry.
There's only a thief approaches from the back. What are you trying to steal? Kalabacha Sridhar. So today is the very auspicious day of the anniversary of the appearance of Sri Nityananda. So, who is this? So Krishnadas Kaviraj in Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a very nice description in the Adi Lila, chapter 5, about Lord Nityananda. And he starts off with one text summarizing everything. Please repeat. Vande Ananta Adbhuta Aishwaryam Vande Nanta Vande Nanta Adbhut Aishwaryam Adbhut Aishwaryam Vande Nant Adbhut Aishwaryam Vande Nant Adbhut Aishwaryam Shri Nityanandam Ishwaram Ishwaram Shri Nityanandam Ishwaram Vande Ananta Adbhuta Aishwaryam Shri Nityanandam Ishwaram. And then Yasya Ichaya Yasyechaya Yasyechaya Tatsvarupam. It's okay. Yeah. You're hired. Agnyenapi Nirupyate Vandinanta Adbhutaishwaryam Shri Nityanandam Ishwaram Yashyechchaya Tatsvarupam Agnyenapi Nirupyate. Let me offer my obeisances to Lord Shri Nityananda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose opulence is wonderful and unlimited. By his will, even a fool can understand his identity. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Veta Chandra Jaya Gora Bhakta Vrinda. Shloke kahila Krishna Chaitanya Mahima Pancha Shloke kahi Nityananda Tattva Singha. I have described, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, the glories of Sri Krishna Chaitanya in 6 verses. Now in 5 verses I shall describe the glory of Lord Nityananda. Sarva avatari Krishna Swayam Bhagavan Tanhar Dvitiya Deha Sri Balaram. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the fountainhead, yeah, of all incarnations. Lord Balaram is his second body. Prabhupada's purport. Lord Sri Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is a primeval Lord, the original form of Godhead. And his first expansion is Sri Balaram. The Personality of Godhead can expand himself in innumerable forms. The forms that have unlimited potency are called Svangsha. And the forms that have limited potency, the living entities, are called Vibhinangsha. Eka Svarupa Donhe Bina Matrakai Adyakaya Vyoha Krishna Lilara Sahai. They are both one and the same identity, Krishna and Balaram. They differ only in form. He is the first bodily expansion of Krishna, and he assists Krishna in transcendental pastimes. That original Lord Krishna appeared in Navadvipa as Chandakazi. No? Lord Chaitanya. And Balaram appeared with him as Lord Nityananda. And this is one of the six slokas then. Sankarsana karanatoya shayi garboda shayi chapayogdi shayi sheshashcha yashankra kalasa nitya nandakya rama sharanam mamastu. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarsan, Sheshanaga, and the Vishnus who lie in the Karana, Garba, and ocean, and the ocean of milk, are his plenary portions, and the portions of his plenary portions. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sripava. Sri Sarupa Damodar Goswami has recorded this verse in his diary to offer his respectful obeisances to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. This verse also appears as the seventh of the first 14 verses in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sri Balaram Gosyani Mula Shankarshan Pancharupe Dari Karing Krishnera Sevan. Lord Balaram is the original Sankarshan. He assumes five other forms to serve Lord Krishna. He himself helps in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And he does the work of creation in four other forms. He executes the orders of Lord Krishna in the work of creation. And in the form of the Lord Sesha, he serves him in various ways. In all the forms, he tastes the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. That same Balaram is Lord Nityananda, the companion of Lord Gaurasundara. I have explained this seventh verse in four subsequent verses. By these verses, all the world can know the truth about Lord Nityananda. Maya tite vyapi vaikuntaloke purnaishvarye shri chatur vyuha madye rupam yashyod bati sankarshanakyam tam shri nityananda raman prapaje. I surrender under the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Ram, who is known as Sankarshan, in the midst of the Chaturvyuha, consisting of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. He possesses full opulences and resides in Vaikuntha Loka, beyond the material creation. This verse is also from Subdamodar Goswami's diary. Beyond the material nature lies the realm known as Para Paravyoma, the spiritual sky. Like Lord Krishna himself, it possesses all transcendental attributes, such as the six opulences. There's a nice purport here. Why not? We'll read this. There's one purport here. It's 14 pages long. Like that. Yes. But Prabhupada didn't give you everything. Not everything, but a lot. According to Shankya philosophy, the material cosmos is composed of 24 elements for now. For 10,000 points, who knows the 24 elements? For 20,000 points. For 100,000 points, who knows one?
Water.
Water, okay. The five gross elements, okay. The three subtle material elements, earth, water, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. The five knowledge-acquiring senses, eyes, ears, nose. Huh? The five active senses, hands, mouth. The five objects of sense pleasure, I guess that's touch, taste, form, sight. And the mahat tattva, the total material energy. Huh? Empiric philosophers, unable to go beyond these elements, speculate that anything beyond them must be avyakta, or inexplicable. But the world beyond the 24 elements is not inexplicable, for it is explained in Bhagavad Gita as the eternal sanatan nature. Beyond the manifested and unmanifested existence of material nature, vyakta, is the sanatana nature, which is also called paramvyoma, or the spiritual sky. Since that nature is spiritual in quality, there is no qualitative difference there. Everything there is spiritual, everything is good, and everything possesses the spiritual form of Sri Krishna himself. That spiritual sky is the manifested internal potency of Sri Krishna. It is distinct from the material sky manifested by his external potency. The all-pervading Brahman, the impersonal glowing rays of Sri Krishna, exists in the spiritual world with the Vaikuntha planets. We can get some idea of that spiritual sky by a comparison to the material sky. For the rays of the sun in the material sky can be compared to the Brahma Jyoti, the glowing rays of the personality of Godhead. In the Brahma Jyoti, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets, which are spiritual and therefore self-luminous, with a glow many times greater than that of the sun. The personality of God is Sri Krishna. His innumerable plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions dominate each Vaikuntha planet. And the highest region of the spiritual sky is a planet called? Highest region is Krishna Loka, which has three divisions, namely Dwarka, Mathura, and Goloka. Ah, yeah. Yes. And it's all Krishna Loka. To a gross materialist, this kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, is certainly a mystery. But to an ignorant man, everything is a mystery for want of sufficient knowledge. The kingdom of God is not a myth. Even the material planets which float over our heads in the millions and billions are still a mystery to the ignorant. Material scientists are now attempting to penetrate this mystery, and a day may come when the people of this earth will be able to travel in outer space and see the variegatedness of these millions of planets with their own eyes. In every planet, there is as much material variegatedness as we find in our own planet. This planet Earth is but an insignificant spot in the cosmic structure. Yet foolish men, puffed up by a false sense of scientific advancement, have concentrated their energy in a pursuit of so-called economic development on this planet, not knowing of the variegated economic facilities available on other planets. According to modern astronomy, the gravity of the moon is different from that of the earth. Therefore, if one goes to the moon, he will be able to jump up, pick up large weights, and jump vast distances. In the Ramayana, Hanuman is described as being able to lift up huge weights as heavy as hills and jump over the ocean. Modern astronomy has confirmed that this is indeed possible. The disease of modern civilization, civilized man, is his disbelief in everything in the revealed scriptures. Faithless non-believers cannot make progress in spiritual realization, for they cannot understand the spiritual potency. The small fruit of a banyan contains hundreds of seeds, and in each seed is the potency to produce another banyan tree, with the potency to produce millions more of such fruits. This law of nature is visible before us, although how it works is beyond our understanding. This is but an insignificant example of the potency of God. There are many similar phenomena that no scientist can explain. Everything, in fact, is inconceivable, for the truth is revealed only to the proper persons, although there are varieties of personalities, from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, all of whom are living entities. Their development of knowledge is different. Therefore, we have to gather knowledge from the right source. Indeed, we can get knowledge in reality only from the Vedic sources. The four Vedas with their supplements, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, and their corollaries, which are known as Smritis, are all authorized sources of knowledge. If we are at all to gather knowledge, we must gather it from these sources without hesitation. Revealed knowledge may in the beginning be unbelievable because of our paradoxical desire to verify everything with our tiny brains. But the speculative means of attaining knowledge is always imperfect. The perfect knowledge propounded in the revealed scriptures is confirmed by the great acharyas, who have left ample commentations upon them. None of these acharyas has disbelieved in the shastras. One who disbelieves in shastras is an atheist, and we should not consult an atheist, however great he may be. A staunch believer in the shastras, with all their diversities, is the right person for whom to gather real knowledge. Such knowledge may seem inconceivable in the beginning, but when put forward by the proper authority, its meaning is revealed, and then one no longer has any doubts about it. So chapter is a very long chapter like that. This is the glories of Lord Nityananda. And For the most part, what Krishnadas Kaviraj is doing is very, very elevated activity. He's describing all these different, you know, expansions of Krishna, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Sankarshan, Mahavishnu, and all their different relationships to each other and how this material world is being created by different sequential activities from different ontological levels, you know. And then finally, he's coming to this point that Balaram, the Lord Nityananda, is the source of all these things. Right? His potencies are inconceivable. You know? And this, of course, is only his material potency. Right? Beyond this are the internal potencies of Lila, Lila Purush, Lila Shakti. And they begin to realize that, wow, this is how things are going on externally. Then internally, whew, it must be unbelievable. You know? It's described that every single inhabitant of Vaikuntha has more power than all the Indras and all the universes combined. But still they laugh at them by taking the roles of little blades of grass just to participate in the opulence of Vaikuntha. Yeah. So when I was first reading all this, I was at the University of California at Davis, you know. And I just graduated and I was trying to figure out what to do, trying different things. And so some devotee, Budhimanta, sold me a Krishna book, this 10th canto, Prabhupada has summary. But those are very big. So the type is very big, it's very easy to read, very meditative. Yeah. So I wasn't sure when to buy it, but he was preaching to me, you know, I had to buy this book, you know. And my wife was standing there glaring at me, you know, don't waste our money. Yeah. So finally I had to make my decision between satisfying her and doing what I thought was right. So I bought the book and I suffered for 2 days after that, chastised by her. But I was reading it on and on like that, you know. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is full of these sayings. Inconceivable, unbelievable stories about Krishna and Balaram. When Jarasandha came to attack Mathura, it was on how many, 18 Akshahinis or something like that, some unbelievable number, you know, of soldiers.
23.
Okay, 23 Akshahinis. I'm sorry, I thought it was only 18. So it's like, you know, unbelievable. And everybody in Mathura was looking out like this ocean of soldiers and elephants and all these war machines come to attack them. But Krishna left them with a much smaller army. But he went out and he was like, you know, annihilating everybody left and right. And then Balaram was feeling a little, you know, disturbed. He wasn't able to participate. Yeah. When everything was over, the story is that Krishna and Balaram were arguing who killed the most demons during this incarnation, because sometimes the incarnate is Ram and Lakshman, and, you know. And so the argument was going on, they couldn't decide, so finally decided to go to Brahma and ask him, you know, who killed the most demons, you know. Then Brahma didn't want to, like, you know, either one. So he said, well, actually, Balaram, Krishna killed more demons than you did, right? But the ones you killed were more powerful. Everybody was happy. So Balaram was watching Krishna out there with the army killing everybody else and chopping off heads, and the heads looked like blood everywhere. The heads looked like floating tortoises. The arms cut off looked like seaweed, and the different jewelry looked like you know, pebbles and sand like that. You know, horses looked floating like small islands. And then and those who were cowards on the parapets of the city, the walls, they became frightened. But those who were heroes were enthusiastic. They became more and more enthusiastic to see all this. Yeah. And then Balaram went out and he started engaging in also the activity. And then the ocean of blood began to overflow in all directions like that. So finally Jarasandha was left with nobody left. And he was arrested by Balaram and finally released to go back again, you know. So all these different stories are there in the Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is basically a Srimad Bhagavatam class, right? Lord Chaitanya comes to show us how to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. So all these things about, you know, Balaram, Adi Sankarshan, Chaturvyu, secondary Sankarshan, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Vasudev, and then also go Vasudev remains Vasudev, Sankarshan becomes Mahavishnu, Pradyumna becomes Bhagavadakshay Vishnu, like that. This is how it's all happening, one level after another of divinity. Right? And then Nityananda, you know, is the source of all these things. His opulences are inconceivable, like that. You know? Krishna, he appeared about how's it go? He was about 35 years old. Lord Chaitanya was about 18 years old. Almost 10 years older than Lord Chaitanya. So he appeared first in Ekachakragram. So still there. It's a very wonderful place. Yeah. Very special place. In Ekachakragram, even if you lie down to sleep, it's taken as offering your obeisances. It's taken as spiritual credit to just lie down and sleep. It's such a merciful place. So in the beginning, they were Hadai Pandit. His father was Hadai Pandit. Very nice Brahmana. And from the very beginning, as soon as he was old enough, Nityananda used to organize all of his boyfriends to play every day in the village. And all they would do is just put on different dramas about all the pastimes of Krishna and Vishnu and so many things. They'd go on and on like that. And everybody, they would just go home just to bare minimum to sleep and eat a little bit, then go back and play like that. And everybody was amazed. They're all asking themselves, how do these boys know all these pastimes like that? And so then at one point, they were playing the pastimes of the Ram Lila. And during that, one boy playing Ravana threw a flower at Nityananda, who was playing Lakshman. And he was knocked to the ground unconscious. And he stopped breathing. And everybody was terrified. He stopped breathing, and the whole village was coming and running like that. And then one boy remembered, oh yes, he told me that if this happens, I should run to the Ganges and get water as a medicinal herb and bring it back. It would revive him. So he ran there. And when he got there, another boy was playing as a crocodile and attacked him. And they fought for some time. And finally he came back with the water and sprinkled it on Lakshman. He came back to consciousness again like that. So he went on and on like this. And then finally one sannyasi, Yati Brahman, was traveling. He came there and stayed with Hadai Pandit, who invited him. And he said, you know, I'm a little old. I need a brahmachari assistant to travel with me. Do you think I could impose upon you to ask you to take your son with me for helping me? And so Hadai Pandit didn't want to refuse, but it broke his heart. So Nityananda left then, and not too long after that, Hadai Pandit left his body and his mother and couldn't tolerate the separation, like Dasarath. So then he traveled everywhere with his Brahmana for many years, several years like that, and then finally somehow or other, I don't know why exactly, but he was then traveling on his own, and he still wasn't giving love of God. Nityananda aham naomi sarvananda karam param harina harinama pradam devam avaduta siromanim. He gives the jewel of the holy name. Right? Raghunath Das Goswami, he was the son of Hiranya and Govardhan. They were the tax collectors for Bengal. It's like being this tax collector for Texas. You know, and they get to keep something like 10 to 15% of all the income to do their job like that. So it's like being tax collector for Texas and keeping 10 to 15% of all the income. So they were unimaginably rich, and their followers were unimaginably number of people to do all this job and keep accounting like that. And so Raghunath was born in this family. And it was very, he liked it, kind of, this and that, you know. But then as soon as Lord Chaitanya started his movement, you know, the distributing love of God with his congregational chanting, you know, he wanted to join. And he kept running off, and his father and mother kept bringing him back like that. You know, you're a rich man's son, you can't join the Hare Krishna temple like that. They'll just make you wash pots and go in the street and beg, you know. So you know, you stay with us. So he kept trying to escape this way and that way, and Lord Chaitanya finally told him, he said, don't be a crazy fellow. You just stay in your family, enjoy life in a civilized fashion, and then Krishna eventually will help you cultivate internally Krishna consciousness. And when you're ready, then everything will be adjusted. So he was running away like this and that, and then his mother told her husband, you know, Raghunath's father, you should tie him up. He's crazy, you know, like that. He's going to run away. And his father said, better we get him married. That it's more difficult to escape from. So they found a very beautiful girl, very chaste, very talented, and singing, so many wonderful things like that. And then she would always call Raghunath to come inside from the veranda. He was in the veranda every night. Oh, come in, Raghu! Just a minute, I'm coming. You know, we never go inside. Sleep in the veranda. So then he heard that Nityananda was traveling all over, and by this time he was giving love of God. You know, until Lord Chaitanya told him to do it, he didn't do it. He was traveling all over the place with his Sankirtan party. just chanting. One incident is described, they came into some village in Bengal, singing and chanting and dancing, and one man jumped out of the tree and said, "I was so-and-so in Ram Lila." And they started dancing together and then danced out of the village. Nobody ever saw the man ever again, like that. So they were going to go to Panihati, on the bank of the Ganges, still there. And of course, very famous festival, description like that. So Raghunath asked his father if he could go because it's very close, and you know, he said, "All right, but you take four guards, you know, one treasurer, a priest, and five servants with you," like that, "and come back after, you know, 4 or 5 days." And they went there. There's a fantastic festival going on, kirtan, and in one big tree, Nityananda was seated with his most intimate associates. When he came from the spiritual world, he brought several gopas, cowherd boys, with him. For example, Ram Abhiram Das is an incarnation of, I think, Sudama, like that. He had a whip called Jayamangala, and whoever he would hit with the whip would immediately develop ecstatic love of God. So he was so pleased with Narottam. Narottam was such a good boy, you know, like that, so wonderful. Then when he saw him and his bhajan and everything, he hit him with his whip, and Narottam was in ecstasy. Then he hit him again, more ecstasy. Then his wife came running and said, "He's just a little boy, don't hit him again, he'll leave his body." So he stopped. So he's incarnation of Sridham, I think Sridham, Madhurani's brother. You know. And then he was sitting there under the tree, and when Raghunath saw him from a distance, you know, like from here to Nandalal's cabin, like that, here to the Garanga Hall, he was watching from behind the tree, and so many hundreds of people were there, Brahmins, and Nityananda was talking, and he thought it was like the sun, you know, surrounded by other luminaries. So then somebody told Nityananda, "Oh, Raghunath's here, over there, Raghu." And he said, "Oh, bring him here, bring him here." He drug him there, and he's paying his obeisances like that. And he said, "You are a thief. You are trying to steal my property." What does he mean? Yeah? But why does he say you're a thief? You're trying to steal my property. Because he's trying to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya without Nityananda's permission. Like that. So today I'm going to punish you, I've caught you. You have to feed all my associates. So Raghunath was very happy with this. He pulled out his platinum plus Visa card. No problem. And a big feast, very famous, you know, for everybody like that. Then Nityananda was very pleased, took his rest that night. And next day Raghunath came and said, I'm like a dwarf who's trying to catch the moon, you know, trying to become, catch, you know, this Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And I failed so many times. But I think by your mercy that it may be possible if you bless me. So he paid his obeisances in front of him. Then Nityananda put his foot on his head and said, "Just look at this fool, Raghunath. He has opulence like Lord Brahma. Right? He has a wife like an angel in heaven. You know? And still, he doesn't want these things. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like it at all. He's such a fool. Instead, he's running after this madman, Krishna Chaitanya. Just see this fool, Raghunath." So he went away. And shortly after that, then Raghunath was able to escape from the house and run away and go all the way to Puri, and his parents were never able to bring him back like that. So this is Nityananda. Yeah, by the mercy of Nityananda, we can get material opulence, everything else is possible unlimitedly. You can become Brahma, you can master of the universe, you know, like that. But that's only a small portion of his opulence. His real opulence is his internal, his position in the internal potency. You know? And Raghunath is showing, you know, some example of that. You know? So he was wandering all over India, but he wasn't giving love of God yet because Lord Chaitanya had not authorized him. Anyway, when he came to Ayodhya, he was falling on the ground in convulsions and ecstasy, remembering these pastimes and everything else like that. And at one point he was traveling one place, and he saw a bunch of Buddhists sitting meditating, you know, and he asked them what their meditation was, what they were doing. He wouldn't say anything to him. So he began to kick them in the head, and they all ran away. And he started laughing uproariously like that, everywhere. So finally he came to Vrindavan, and there he would just play all the time with the cowherd, with different cowherd boys, and engage them in all kinds of sporting activities and just wonderful, funny things all the time. And finally he understood, oh, okay, now Nimai has gone to Gaya. And he's now manifesting himself in his, as the Yuga avatar. And he's giving the holy names. Not just in the mood of Vaikuntha, but in the mood of Vrindavan. You know, so many things. So then he went to Navadweep, and then Lord Chaitanya is telling his followers, my brother is coming, my brother is coming. You know, but Nityananda was hiding in the house of Srivas. Maybe Srivas. Someplace. They went all over the place looking. They couldn't find him. And finally they found him. And they met, of course, with such, you know, happiness, ecstasy, you know, meeting. And after that, Lord Nityananda was helping constantly Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes, you know, of distributing the holy names. You know, he told some stories this morning about how Nityananda took Nimai to visit one sannyasi who had a wife and was drinking wine. But he was just an innocent guy, basically, you know, like that. Wasn't, you know, envious or anything else. And then he took him in going there and taking a little prasad from him, and that way the person was benefited and lost all of his interest in all these things, you know, developed a higher taste. So this is Nityananda. He goes everywhere, you know, to try and deliver people, engage them in different activities. One time Prabhupada was in France. Haribas told us. And they had a very nice program, and after they went out, and it was in the evening, and they're waiting for their car to come to pick up Prabhupada and the devotees and go back to the temple. And it was taking some time because of all the traffic. So Haribas asked Prabhupada if he'd like to sit down in one bistro, in one outside cafe. And there was some tables there and chairs. And Prabhupada asked him, he said, do they serve alcohol and meat in this place? And Haribas said, well, yes, Prabhupada. And the Prabhupada said, well, the Acharya cannot sit in such a place. Yeah. So as the Acharya, Prabhupada had to set a certain standard. Yeah. Another time, one devotee, Bhagavat Das, was with Prabhupada in Bombay after they purchased the land there. And they were staying, and they had one of the apartment buildings on the land. They had one of the apartments there finally been vacated. So Prabhupada was, you know, sitting on the roof. You know, one afternoon, and some devotees were there, and Prabhupada was talking about things. And then as the evening went on, everybody had to leave for different services, but Bhagavat was staying with Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada started to talk about Mahatma Gandhi. And like his idea was just that everybody should live a simple life in the village, for the most part, you know, and have some occupation, make some cloth or make some different dyes or, you know, do some service in medicine. Everybody should have some simple way just to maintain themselves and live very happily with the natural produce of the, you know, of India, like that. And but then, you know, came along, and then this other ideas came to industrialize everything and try and imitate the West, and all these things happening like that, you know. So Prabhupada was saying, I love Gandhi. He is such a good man, nice idea, you know. So the next day, every morning, Prabhupada would go on a morning walk, you know, along the beach in Juhu, like that. And so they were there, and you know, Bhagavat, devotees would follow. And this day they were going much farther than they usually went, like that, down the beach. And everybody would come, you know, and Prabhupada would, like, you know, offer respects to everybody. And according to their rank, they would fall in the line like that. Like that. Dr. Patel would always, you know, walk with Prabhupada and argue about things like that. And, you know, it was an ongoing rasa. So for some time they were walking, they probably stopped and turned towards the inland and paid his respects like that. And there was nobody there. So all the devotees were thinking, oh my God, maybe the demigods are coming, or Narada Muni or something like that. Looking, you know. But then Bhagavat said he looked off in the distance, and the distance was a very nice statue of Mahatma Gandhi. You know, pretty distant like that. And then thinking about the night before, he was thinking, oh, Prabhupada walked down here because he knew this was here and he wanted us to, you know, offer his respects like that. You know. So they turned around and started walking back. And then Bhagavad said, by nature's arrangement, God's arrangement, one man started coming and glorifying Gandhi about being a great philosopher and his ideas and this and that. Then Prabhupada started arguing about it and saying, this is not Bhagavad Gita, this is something else and this and that, and, like, you know, on and on like that, you know. So apparently he was, like, you know, arguing about Gandhi's understanding of the Gita and stuff like that and like that, you know. And but then he said, he turned to Bhagavad, was on the side like that, and went like that, meaning, you know how I feel about Gandhi, you know, but as the Acharya, you know, I have to be very strict about, you know, protecting Bhagavad Gita and the philosophy strictly, correctly, like that. So this is Lord Chaitanya. He's the Acharya. He's the supreme personality of the Godhead, right? But he expands himself, you know, to give mercy in the form of Nityananda, like that. And Nityananda can do all kinds of crazy things that Lord Chaitanya can't do, right? He's his second self. Nityananda was going all around Navadvip, and he was clothed only in the four directions, Digambar, you know, completely naked, you know, and playing like a cowherd boy, like a little boy, just totally crazy and everything else like that, you know? And so everybody could approach him, you know? So many pastimes in Navadvip. And then when Lord Chaitanya was taking sannyas, Nityananda, who was Chandrasekhar, I think four people accompanied him to take sannyas like that. That, of course, is a whole incredible pastime of Lord Chaitanya's sannyas. Unbelievable. And then they were traveling, and people were saying, he's taking sannyas now, he wants to go to Vrindavan, but you have to redirect him to Advaita Acharya's house, because the Mother Sachi will get one last chance to see him and all the devotees like that, because now he's not going to come back, you know. So Nityananda was, you know, Lord Chaitanya was in so much ecstasy. Nityananda said, yes, yes, we're in Vrindavan, this is a Jamuna, don't worry, just come with me, Nimai, you know, like that. And she said, oh, she got there so quick. He said, yes, very quick. And then Advaita Acharya is coming across from Shantipur in a boat. And then Lord Chaitanya is saying, Advaita, how did you get to Vrindavan? He said, no. And he said, wherever you are is Vrindavan. Come with me. Like that. Then he understood, he's chastised Nityananda for tricking him again. But then Mother Sachi came and was able to cook for Nimai, I think, for three more days, and the devotees. And then he took off. And they went to Remuna. They saw Sakshi Gopal. They saw, well, Sakshi Gopal, Shirkshwar Gopinath, the stories of Madhavendra Puri on the way to Puri. And then just within sight of Puri, Lord Nityananda made an excuse of falling on Lord Chaitanya's danda and breaking it in three pieces like that. Danda Bangalila. Because his point was he couldn't tolerate Lord Chaitanya being under any formality. You're the source of all these things. He broke his danda in three pieces for tridandi sannyas. And Lord Chaitanya wanted to approach Jagannath alone, so he made this excuse saying, you all, I only have one possession, my danda, and you guys broke it. So, if you want to follow, you follow, but I'm going to go ahead alone, like a real sannyasi. So he arrived there, in a very wonderful movie, by Nimai of Nadia and Lakshmi Mahaprabhu. And after he was in ecstasy, and Sarvabhauma took him to his house, and then Nityananda arrived with all their followers looking for him, and they found him. So sometime, you know, Nityananda was there. But many times he was sent by Lord Chaitanya to do different missions. And some people say, oh, that's because he didn't like him or something. No, it was a more intimate associate. He was sent him back to Bengal. He wanted to stay in Puri with him, with Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya said, except for you, I see nobody, you know, other than yourself who can deliver these Bengalis, like that, you know. So he sent him back to Bengal, and he was preaching everywhere there, like that. And then finally, later when Lord Chaitanya left, he never took sannyas, I don't think formally, he was a brahmachari. So he married Janava and Vasudha, no? Her younger sister. And from them came a few children, and one of them was Ganga Devi herself, and beautiful poems about her by somebody, Lochandas. He said when she would run around the house, it was like the Ganges flowing in the house. She was so graceful and always just playing and running like that. So that was their all. And Jenna, it was very kind of complicated, because to participate in the pastimes of Vrindavan, Balaram expands himself, or somehow or other becomes a Nangamanjari, who is Radharani's younger sister. It's all very complicated at this level, very sophisticated. How Balaram relates to Krishna, Radharani relates to Balaram. You know, Balaram expands himself to not cause improprieties as a Nangamanjari. So a Nangamanjari then becomes Janava, like that. And then she takes the position of Radharani in the Kali Yuga, especially, to give love of God. And after the disappearance of Nityananda, others, and she became the Acharya. Yeah, in many senses like that. Yeah. So it's unlimited. Go on talking about, you know, the glories of Lord Nityananda unlimitedly. But it's very interesting. First, that Advaita Acharya's appearance day happens, right? And we're never separated from Krishna. There's no duality. This is Krishna, that's not Krishna. So Advaita, the Paramatma, we're always with Krishna. This is Krishna, right? You know, you should, so the advanced devotee is bowing down to anything and everything. Because everywhere he sees how everything is respectful, everything is Krishna. You can't abuse a tree. You can't, you know, throw your japa beads down after you're chanting. They're all, you know, in proper proportion, in proper variety, right? They're all Krishna, and connected to Krishna. So first Advaita is giving us lessons, right? How to understand who we are. And if we're sufficiently advanced, then we go to Guru, Nityananda. Right? And he's, Nityananda, Balaram is dancing with gopis, like Krishna. But he never dances with them in the mood of an enjoyer. Krishna's enjoying the different activities of the gopis like that. Balaram is dancing in the mood of a dance teacher, who's teaching ladies how to dance with their husbands, how to do the cha-cha, the rumba, the samba, I don't know what else we got. Flamenco, right? Yeah, he's teaching them. So he's enjoying this a conjugal relationship, but in this indirect sense of how Krishna is going to really appreciate how these girls have learned how to dance together nicely and sing and present these different ragas like that. You know? Yeah. And so he's always in this mood of service to Krishna. And when we're ready, then, you know, by the mercy of Nityananda, then we can, you know, approach Krishna like that. Yeah. So, any comments, questions, complaints? All three?
Term as avatuta.
Yeah.
So, is that a unique feature of his lila, or are there instances in the Veda and the Vedic scriptures or other incarnations also have been termed as avatutas?
Yeah, Rishabhdev. Yeah, he was, of course, a proper king, and he educated his sons, and then he left everything and just became completely oblivious to everything. Even though he'd been the emperor, he would walk everywhere, and sometimes people would catch him and tie him up like a strange animal. Then other times he would pass gas in his face and just spit on him, you know. And he would lie down anywhere, and just when food would come, he would eat it, you know. And, but his stool and urine were fragrant for like 2 miles or something like that, you know. So outside the injunctions, Jada Bharat. And he would also act as his son, also later became Jabra Avadut. Prahlad Maharaj saw one Avadut Brahman? Yeah. I met so many cases like that. This is, Paramahansa, when he comes to the highest level, he doesn't have to follow these external rules anymore, like that. One, there's a guy, Patton, General Patton, famous powerful American general. He had one lieutenant who was his aide-de-camp, you know, taking care of things for him and giving orders to other people and stuff like that. So after some time of being his aide-de-camp for maybe a couple of weeks or something like that, General Patton told him, you do this. And he, you know, screwed up his courage and he said, General Patton, I don't think that's right. You know, and General Patton's looking at him and he got more courage up and he said, General, I don't think you became a general by being a yes man. And the general was looking at him and saying, yes, that's true. But that's how I became a colonel. Yeah. So we're following rules and regulations, everything else. But at a certain point, yes, and we become a part of the internal decision-making process. And we have to bring our full soul to the process like that. You know? So, but if one is an acharya, like Prabhupada, you know, then in most circumstances you have to act in such a way that if neophytes imitate your example, they'll be acting properly. But sometimes in the internal situation, like for example, there's a story that one time Prabhupada was in Germany and they heard this all this noise in his room and things are bouncing around and smashing and the devotees go to the door and listen, they knock on the door and it goes on and knock louder and finally Prabhupada comes to the door and opens the door and his glasses run crooked and his shirt's disheveled, the furniture's turned over and the carpet's in the wrong place. And the devotees are saying, Prabhupada, what happened? And Prabhupada said, I was wrestling with Krishna. Like that. And the boys are amazed. And Papa said, and I won. So you know, sometimes in certain circumstances you see he was also, you know. But in general, if you're an acharya, a founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, anybody who looks at his character and comportment and just does the same thing, you know, will be acting properly. Yeah. And then later on, like an adult, he may see many children playing, and he can walk across the street, in the middle of the street, but he thinks, nah, let me walk to the corner, wait for the light to change, you know? Yeah?
Yes, sir. Mr. Bhagavan Prabhu.
Nobody can approach Radha and Krishna without the help of Lord Nityananda.
As it go, Golokera, as it go, Raja Nityananda. It's the song. Raja Radha Krishna Pama. Nitayer Koruna. Nitayer Koruna Habe. Raja Radha Krishna Pave. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many Hindus worshiping Radha Krishna all over the world. Even including Lord Chaitanya, right? Especially.
No, but everybody can see the moon. Everybody can see the moon, right? But if you want to see it in detail, you get a telescope, you know, like that. You see the same thing, you know, but now you see better, like that, you know. So this is parampara. Guru parampara comes from Nityananda or from Radharani. Yeah, it's a little complicated. But yeah, basically, nobody can go to Radha and Krishna. So what are they understanding, you know? That, you know, God is good. You see big signs in churches sometimes. It says God is love. You know? God is good. You know, God is, you know, it's Brahman at the best. It's a very general understanding like that. It's not really appreciating that the form is like that or something. Or they're thinking, they're telling kind of like, you know, what's it, racy jokes in terms of Radha and Krishna and their pastimes and, you know, enjoying a little subtle, you know, subtle sexual sensuality. Not gross, but something a little, you know, like that. And they think it's some other, you know, it's like some miscomprehension, which just comes back to this world. And, you know, one person told me, he showed me a picture of his girlfriend, and she said, "This is my Radha." Not sure. Yeah, in some ways, yes, but it's a very, you know, it's a very, very distant, you know, conception. Prabhupada says that the sahajiyas who try and imitate Krishna, Radha, he said they're better than the Mayavadis who try and like say everything is nothing. He said the Mayavadis are hopelessly impersonal. He says the sahajiyas, at least they think Krishna is worth imitating, right? His activities. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's like that. And then it's like, I don't know, for 25 pages he's going through these material manifestations until finally you begin to realize, you know, that Prabhupada says if you understand the mood of the gopis after 1,000 lifetimes, you begin to understand that you're doing very good. Like that, you know? So maybe by his mercy, even a fool can understand these things. Yeah. So then by the mercy of Prabhupada, the mercy of Guru Parampara, then we can get a little idea, you know, what it might be like, you know, to go on, to get courage, right? And to go on like that. Yeah. And every step along the way is nice, you know. You know, it's not like you have to go all the way before you're improved or you're happy. No, every step is better. We worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi and Narayan. With formalities, rules, regulations. This is Aishwarya. But the Madhurya, this is totally informal. Yeah, like that. Yeah? They don't follow rules and regulations so much exactly. Like in Vrindavan, the Pujari, when there's a cold day in the winter, we were in Ravel, where Radharani appeared. So he took the deities out off the altar and put them out in the sun like that. And they're like many, very old, you know, old deities like that. He's a Brijbasi, and they're part of the family. They have this sentiment. We were in Nandagaon, and up on the hill is this, you know, Nanda Maharaj's city. It's so wonderful there. Then down below is a temple of Vrindadevi, you know, which we ISKCON took over. But the Pujari is Brijbasi, and the older deity of Vrindadevi was replaced by a new marble deity like that. And so then the person who gave it to ISKCON was when Babaji, he left his body. So when I was there, one Western devotee was taking pictures of everything very nicely. The Pujari was very pleased. And he was going to take a picture of the picture of the Babaji that gave us the temple to him. And so the Pujari said, "Oh yeah, take a picture of Baba with Vrinda." And it was like he was talking about his cousin or something. Something very... And the Brijbasis are like that. If you get a little purified, you realize that these are not ordinary people. You know? In so many ways you realize that. So let me stay in the ISKCON temple and stay with the parikrama, and every now and again I'll, you know, stick my nose out a little bit. You know, one time we went through the village was on one side, And there are pathway, you know, 200-300 devotees in the parikrama, and then kind of this little hill, and one young cow, she wasn't a calf, but she wasn't very old, became very frightened by all this, and she started like, you know, running or something, and, you know, kind of hurt people. So this bridge boss, he came out, and says like a doli doli or something, doli doli, doli. No worries, just came out, just touched her, and immediately she was like, you know, people like that. You know. So very... You know, to really see Radha and Krishna, you need the mercy of Nityananda. Yeah? It's very subtle. Okay? Any other comments or questions over here? Yes, sir. Wow. Amar Indra.
Maya used to mention that anybody who doesn't believe in Shastra is atheist.
Probably says that, yeah.
And then, you know, Prabhupada also said that when you are 50 and after years of day old, you have to leave the family and go to the forest and purify your...
Well, he doesn't say that exactly. That's what vanaprastha means. No, it's just the Vedas are describing that you should have a plan for your life, a strategy. There's one king. He was very powerful. He had many, many ministers. You know, minister of education, minister of health, minister of defense, so many things. But he wanted a minister of stupidity, like that. So he told his ministers, look for the biggest fool in the kingdom. And they finally found this guy. So he made him to the, Murkipati, I don't think that's something, the most stupid guy. And as the events would pass, every now and again he'd do something really stupid. And so the king would give him a different badge, like that, a different award for, you know, fulfilling his thing. So finally, nature's going on. The king was getting very old, and he's going to leave his body in some very short time. So he called for his different ministers, arranging things, and he called for the minister of stupidity to come there. And he told him, he said, "Oh, I'm going to be leaving in a few days, like that." And so the fool asked him. He said, "Where are you going?" And he said, "Well, I'm not exactly sure." And he said, "Well, can I come with you? Are the queens coming like normally, and the ministers like that?" He says, "No, I have to make this journey alone." And I said, "Oh, well, who's going to take care of you when you get there?" So I don't know, you know. And he said, "Well, how long have you had known you had to make this journey?" And he said, "Well, most of my life." So the fool's thinking, you know. And he starts taking his badges off, looking at them one by one and putting them by the king's side. And the king says, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I've always been known as the greatest fool in this kingdom. But actually thinking about it, you're a bigger fool than I am. All your life you've known you had to make this journey, but still you haven't figured out where you're going, what you're going to do, or how to go there, or what you can take with you." You know? Yeah. So, same way, so that the Vedas are saying, have a plan for your life. We're going to live 100 years, maybe. You know? So 25 years, be a student. But acquire knowledge of how to control the senses, of character development. Technical knowledge is very easy if you have these things, like that. So become a man, cultured person. Then if you're intelligent enough, you understand the basic education in brahmacharya life is to understand that we are all more or less prisoners of matter, right? And our thing is, in this lifetime, is to get out of this and go to our spiritual possibilities. But in most cases, most of us can't understand this just by hearing about it. You know, I was married. Yeah. My wife ran off. You know? Yeah. So we have to enter grihastha ashram. Like that, and try it out. You know, looks like trash. You know, smells like trash. Yep, it's trash. but there's a difference between just tasting a little bit and eating a big spoonful like that. You know, so we try and experiment. You know, following the Vedas, trying. You know, me Tarzan, you Jane, him Cheetah, and this is the only movie there is, again and again and again. Me Napoleon, you Bonaparte. You know, over and over again. There we go again. Me Tarzan, you Jane. You know. So we're trying it again and again. But it's a controlled experiment. And if you do it properly, one time is enough. And you realize, I'm not Tarzan, you're not Jane. It's like that. That's somebody else. We're all cheetah. We're all monkeys. You know. But to participate. Right? Yeah. And we can do that. You know, best actor and best actress. You know, the awards for that, you know, it's good. Radha and Krishna are going to win it. But But best supporting actor, best makeup, best script, all these things are open like that. And that's our position. Then we're happy, you know? So Brahmacharya Ashram, right? And then Grihastha Ashram, it's a science. You know, the Bhagavatam gives so much detail about how to do this. You know? Okay, and then, usually, by the time you reach 50, by 50 years old, the sensuous strain from the body is finished. Right? You can push it, maybe, say, to 55. I tried pushing it to 57. I did. I mean, because that was kind of my schedule and stuff like that. And I could really see I was pushing it to keep the same schedule. Last year, I almost died. My God, you know, that's whether Guru Bhakti was right, my left here, my white cell count was down to like the Ayurvedic doctor on the other end, like, you know, was telling me, well, you know, same diagnosis, and gave me this whole diet and everything else. And but I also knew that I, you know, had, you know, way deep down it was okay. So after about a week, I was back to normal health. But that was because we had to do this, arrange this whole program in South America. You know. But that was it. You know, it doesn't matter what, I'm not going to do it again. Can't. You know? So about 50 years old, the idea is then, you know, vanaprastha. And basically in the modern world, probably saying this means to, you know, husband and wife become completely celibate in their relationships. They, you know, get rid of their big house, you know, all these things, all the overhead, their budget, liquidated, maybe get a, you know, small apartment in a retirement city, or best thing, near the temple, small place like that. Get some place like in Vrindavan or Mayapur. You know, probably especially wanted vanaprastha ashram for ISKCON in Vrindavan and Mayapur. You can live in Vrindavan for $100 a month. One room, one bathroom, one kitchen. If you want a second room, okay, $150. Like that. You know? And then always things are going on. Always all kinds of activities there. And then you can do a lot of good service by helping out with your wisdom, guiding people, giving advice. A lot of young people want to do things but need advice. You know? So it's vanaprastha, right? And then the wife, if she wants to, she can travel with the husband and doing things like that. But it's too difficult, so maybe she stays more with the family and becomes very responsible, you know, for giving guidance like that, you know, in the family. And then you become practiced in this. Basically, for reading Prabhupada's book, saying is that's enough in the Kali Yuga, really, the vanaprastha situation like that, you know, like that. But if you really want to push the whole, you know, social, you know, thing all the way, then you take sannyas. And the wife becomes a voluntary widow, you know, civil widow, and the husband becomes a civil dead man, and legally in India you sign documents. At that point you know, nobody can come and demand any money from you, and at the same time you can't own anything. It's finished. You know, like that. And then that's to understand that everybody is the same family. Was it Vasudeva, Kudumbaba, we're all part of the same family. And it's not out of frustration, one may just give it all up, you know, and die in a secluded place where nobody knows, is dira. But narta means he gives it up, you know, to achieve something higher, is to become everybody's, you know, family member, you know? You know? To go and talk to, you know, Saddam Hussein, George Bush, hey look, we're all worshiping the same God, come listen to me, you know? And finally come to some agreement, and they agree, well actually it's a fact, you know, and let's just try and put our differences aside and try and work together. You know, that's what's going to solve the problem. Right? And God will bless us then. Yeah. So it's a bit, you know, the most important job. You know, is vanaprastha sannyas, like that. But Narada Muni gives the example in the second canto, first canto, taking off as a child. He would go everywhere, just drinking water from the rivers, eating fruit from the trees, and having no support, traveling everywhere to see everything. This is vanaprastha sannyas. You're duty bound to do this. So the purport probably says it's not possible in the current age. Right? It's actually forbidden to take sannyas in the current age. But somebody who engages in preaching activities in the Sankirtan movement and gives up, you know, social intercourse, you know, takes spiritual relationship with everybody, that's a different matter, like that. Yeah? So that's recommended. Yeah. Otherwise, it's always this bodily conception. It all reinforces it. You're my daddy. You're my son. And it's just not these things, you know? And I have to take care of you, and I have to steal from you, you know? One time we were taking off in the airport in Lima, Peru, and we were going, like, to the airport, and there was this monument with some soldiers like that, big brass monument. And I'd ask him, what is this? Oh, that's the monument to the brave Peruvian soldiers who died in the war with the evil Chileno soldiers. Chile's south of there. So we land, and then by God's arrangement on the way to the temple in Chile, there's a monument. I asked, what is this? Oh, that's a monument to the brave soldiers of Chile who died fighting the evil soldiers of Peru. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, we were at the border. One of my disciples is from Fazilka, district Ferozpur in Punjab. It says in Punjab, one of my disciples is there. So we went down to where the border is, right? For like, I don't know, about, you know, 6 kilometers before you get there, it's all landmines. You see different dead animals who, you know, didn't know, couldn't read the signs like that. When you get closer, and finally there's a military, small, you know, base, small encampment. Right in the border. And as you can see, this other side of this little area is where the Pakistani soldiers are, and they have a flag down ceremony at the same time exactly. They lower their flags the same time, and then they walk and fold them and put them away like that. You know? And you can see this. It's the same farmers, the same people, both sides, but all this, you know, artificial mode of passion, you know, thing is there, creating all these artificial things. So that's the purpose. Give up this social, you know, what's the word, egoistic social life. And that's what's recommended. You know. So you should do that. You know, turn everything over to your children. Yeah. Yep. Okay. How old are you? Yeah. But the wife is taken care of. You know, she has grown up sons now. She also realizes, I mean, you know, we should get ready. You know? Otherwise, what happens? You wake up, the lady wakes up in bed, there's a dead body next to her in the bed. You know? No, get prepared. Yeah.
But how come the still ego comes in the middle and desires start up and still say, no, I have to wait, I can do this, I want to do this?
No, because material nature is so attractive, so powerful. Even Maharaj Pariksit, you know, Krishna had to pull him out. Yeah. So it's not a surprise. It's expected. And Balaram comes and pulls us out. You know? That's it. Yeah. But we have to take advantage of this. That's our main job. It's not like, you know, doing things. It's taking the mercy, being aware of the mercy when it comes. That's our job. You know, to do, get out of the material world. But when there's, you know, famous story is told that when flood's coming, the roads are covered with water, when a big truck goes down the road and tells this man, come out of your house, we'll save you. He says, no, I'm waiting for God to save me. So then the flood comes higher, he's in the second floor, a boat goes by, he says, get in the boat, we'll save you. No, I'm waiting for God to save me. You know? He's up on the roof, helicopter comes and, you know, drops a rope down, ladder, and says, rip the rope, we'll save you. You know, he says, no, I'm waiting for God to save me. So they're running out of gas, they have to leave. And then the clouds part, and a big light comes out of the sky on him, and a big voice says, what are you waiting for? I've already sent a truck, a boat, and a helicopter. You know? So our job is not to get out of the flood. Our job is to recognize that and be humble. You know, I need this, and this fool is telling me this, and I've got to be humble enough to accept what this fool is telling me. Well, one last point, stop. Prabhupada was in, I think it was Atlanta, and Balabhanda told us, and they invited the media and all these big things, and that was advertising, you know, Vedic sacrifice, never seen before in the Western world, you know, transcendental, you know, God-man coming, all these things, you know. And so they had this big program going on with live television, and somebody from the mayor's office, or the mayor was there, and they were doing all these making all these mistakes. And Prabhupada was becoming more and more irritated. They were putting, you know, putting the coconut in the fire pit or something, and all this stuff. You know. So Prabhupada would say, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Where did you learn this? You know. And Balabhadra was becoming the president more and more, like, you know, under stress, you know, happening on television. And then at some point, then there was one Bhakta Leroy or something, you know, was having given the honor of fanning Prabhupada. You know, so he's fanning Prabhupada. And at one point, Balabhadra said, he heard him say, oh, Srila Prabhupada, just chant Hare Krishna. And Balabhadra thought, that's it. Fire is going to come out of Prabhupada's eyes, and right on television, he's going to burn the mayor to death in front of everybody. It's for finished, you know. So he said, Prabhupada looked up, this is Bhakta, he's smiling at him, And apparently, you know, he thought, okay, Krishna's talking to me. He put his hand in his bead bag and started chanting, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama. You know, so there's Krishna and there's Guru. Sometimes Krishna says, oh, Balaram, Guru, don't worry, they're trying their best, you know, it's okay, you know. Other times Guru says, I know, but I'm their Guru, so I have to do this. You know, you be quiet, you know, I know you're God, but, you know, my job to straighten them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Krishna's always there, you know, we have to look for these things, these opportunities. And when they come, just be, you know, humble enough and sharp enough and use whatever intelligence we have to grab the rope, right? You know, like that. The mercy of Nityananda. Nityananda Prabhu ki. Nityananda Triodasi ki. Shishi Gaur Purnima ki. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Prashaw, Prashaw. You should get some new blue tack. It's like slime.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should change it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
First off, again.
Okay.
Other way. Gotta practice this. No.